I think. Oh, there we go. So there you go. All right. So Constitution, adequate protection is grounded in a balancing of interests under the Fifth Amendment. And so overlaying an owner's rights to not have a taking of its property is the due process recognition that, you know, by the bankruptcy clause of the Constitution, property rights can be imposed upon. And that's an important thing that has to be balanced by the bankruptcy judges and in the bankruptcy process. And, you know, you sort of look back and you're going, wow, this is sort of going in a direction I didn't anticipate. But when you think about it, you know, who would have thunk, this being Texas, who would have thunk that as we go through and we're fighting over whether a debtor can use, sell, or lease property, that what we're really dealing with are issues of constitutional importance, and that we bankruptcy lawyers in our day-to-day craft are actually practicing constitutional law. And there's a lot of truth in that. And whether somebody gets to keep their car or in the case mentioned this morning, her mobile home, or a client gets to have its construction equipment drove into the ground by a debtor, you know, for a pittance, those are at their core issues of constitutional law. And is what is going on fair? Is it properly balancing the right of the secured creditor to get compensation and the debtor's need to use the property and the estate and the process's right to use the property? We'll go through some basic blocking and tackling. I think many of you are familiar with these, but, you know, Section 361 of the code actually tells you what constitutes or how can you provide adequate protection. And 361 is a non-exclusive list. And it's only limited by the creativity of the lawyers and the facts. The traditional method is periodic payments. Can be weekly, can be monthly, quarterly. I've not seen annually. Maybe some of our judges have. A second method is you provide additional or replacement liens on property, particularly Section 552 property, where post-petition property of the estate is not encumbered by pre-petition liens, and that is a way that you can induce secured creditors to continue to allow them to use your property. Another available asset to the debtor, often controversial, is can the debtor offer up its Chapter 5 claims, or does the debtor have other intangible rights or claims that have value that can provide a measure of adequate protection to allow them to use, sell, or lease the property? And a third category specified but non-exclusive is to allow the creditor a super priority administrative claim in a Chapter 11 that compensates it for the diminution in the value of its collateral for them to use during the case. And I noticed in Bill Rochelle's newsletter that comes out daily, if you don't get it, I would highly recommend it. There's always something new and interesting to think about there. But there was a case mentioned, the headline this morning was super priority claims in Chapter 11 are given recognition and have validity in Chapter 7. And so perhaps, and I haven't digested the case, there's a lot more to those super priority claims than meets the eye, because even if you end up in a 7, you may have an avenue for recovery. But the one thing that adequate protection is not is a wing, a hope, and a prayer. You have to have something of tangible value to offer in exchange for using, selling, or leasing property. When does it matter? Well, really, it matters the day the case is filed. When the petition is filed, the stay's in effect, and adequate protection is now an issue, and it's put an issue for anyone who's a secured creditor. And woe to the creditor having an interest in collateral that sits and allows its property to be used, with one exception I'll get to in a minute. But these principles of adequate protection also apply in 365 when you're trying to assume and use executory contracts and lease property. Cash collateral is sort of your exception scenario for, you know, the secured creditor aggressively pursuing its interest. It doesn't mean that it shouldn't. It's just the process is geared such that the debtor is obligated to get permission to use cash collateral and to offer adequate protection for that use from the get-go in the case. This is often an area that can really be a trap for the dabbler in bankruptcy who tries to take on a debtor representation, but also can trip up even the best of us. If we don't realize as debtor's counsel that what we're dealing in is cash collateral, and we allow ourselves to just think we can spend it and not have to go get a permission slip and to provide adequate protection for spending it. But, you know, in the instance of cash collateral, the burden's on the debtor to come in and get permission. Now, I say that with the caveat, after hearing this morning's talk, maybe the Ninth Circuit defense to contempt that, you know, you have an empty head and a pure heart, that you don't have to worry about these kind of things, might fly in this context. I don't think it'll fly very far in this particular instance, but we'll see if the Supreme Court decides to undercut, as Bill Rochelle mentioned, the concept and the integrity of the stay protecting estate assets.